Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode, I talk to puppeteer, LARPer, artist, and performer Ellen Lavery about her varied talents and career paths. We talk about growing up in a fantastical family and training to be a stunt performer. The episode was recorded on Instagram Live, 11 December 2022.
So it's quite a challenge for how to introduce you because you have so many feathers in your cap. So I'm going to say Ellen Lavery, stunt performer, actor, prop maker, puppeteer, performer. Performer in general is kind of like the direction that it's headed. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really great to have you here. What I'd like to do is just go through all the different sort of avenues that you have gone down and continue to explore in your career. So we've recently done a stint at Thought Park doing some scare acting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, first thing I want to make very clear is that I'm very much in training. I've only graduated just about a year and a half ago, and to get to being a stunt performer, it takes like 5 years. Yeah. So I'm only like at the very, very beginning of that journey. With the scare acting, I first scare acted at university before the COVID times. In a small, brilliant, little scare attraction called Terror Mountain, where I got to meet some wonderful people and just kind of dipped my foot in the water of live performance and found out how much I loved it. And in that one, I only played the one character for most of the run. So I got on my CV Pet of Satan. Which is quite a fun thing to have on a CV. I played the skeletal bird demon of Satan.
Profile picture, is it not?
And no, that's Ziggy. He's my freelance puppet. Who was basically, he was very lightly inspired. I really enjoyed this kind of bird character, but Ziggy's a lot less scary. this one, it was just like a big red hood and skeletal bird face coming out of the front. And with that one, it was set in, what's so great about that site is that it's set in a historical mining town. And the maze was, we went through hell, but it was inside their mining shed. And to go into the attraction, you went through the mine shaft, so you actually went down into hell before rising up into the attraction in the mine. And I met them. Yeah, it was brilliant. I met them just before they met Satan, and that was where I jumped up. Then I had to run up the stairs and run past Satan, give him the thumbs up, and he went, did his spiel, and then I continued afterwards into the fog room. But the thing was, because this was such a historical building with this set of stairs, they were really narrow and really steep. And I'm quite short. I'm 5'6" and quite slight as well. And these robes were meant to fit any performer. So they were safety pinned up for me. I scared these people right up the stairs past Satan. They'd gone through, and then I heard the next lot come down, so I had to run back down the stairs. And on part of the run, the safety pin came out, and I fell down said stairs.
Oh, no.
Who knows? My arm was so bruised. Like, I don't know how I didn't break anything. And I was there in this crumpled heat at the bottom and just had Satan's head pop around the corner and go, "Are you okay?" And then they go, "Yeah, I'm good. I think so." And they go, "Okay, people are coming. I'll see you in a bit." And then off he went to go scare them.
Good old Satan. He's so caring.
He looked out for me.
So that was your first experience of acting at an event.
And I think you could say I got the bug. So I applied this year, coming out of COVID and everything, and I kind of, you know what, it's being a freelancer, you get turned down for loads of jobs, and I just got turned down for one. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on the internet searching for jobs, and Scare Acting at Thorpe Park came up, and I applied to it. And just as well, an email came through to remind me I did that at 3 o'clock in the morning, saying I've got the audition. So I was lucky enough to, I did the audition. It was one of the most intense auditions I've ever done. It was about 6 hours long. They wanted to make sure that you had the stamina to do the run.
Right.
And I got cast in Trailers, which is their, it was their second year running. It's one of their more lighthearted ones. It tells a story. You're in a cinema and power surges go off that have been bringing the movies to life, and an usher's been lost in the movies, and you have to go through the movies to find the usher. The thing is, each of the movies was one of the historical majors they've done. So the fans of Thorpe Park and of their attractions would be able to go, oh, this was part of Bozos, which are the mains 3 years ago or whatever. What was really great about that was that they had 24 different characters, and I had to learn the scripts and the parts of every single one of them, because I go in the morning and get told, so you're playing these three. There were different rotations that did different three, because three characters shared the same makeup. And then I'd go and play those. And then each time you went, you played a different one. It was fast paced, really good fun, but knackering, because you went for 6 hours. You went in, it was 6 hours, and the through fair, I think on our busiest night, we had 16,000 people go through the maze.
Imagine Halloween must have been the busiest time for you.
It wasn't actually Halloween, it was the day before Halloween.
Ah.
I think Halloween was a Monday, so kids had gone to school. So it was actually at the Saturday, Sunday before Halloween, where they were the busiest days. But to be honest, all that week we were at full capacity. And the maze was full. There was no time off in the maze. And what was so much fun with that was that it was a team around us. There were so many, and you got instant feedback. You learned so much from it, because if you jumped out at them and they didn't scream, then you thought, okay, maybe there was something off in that. I need to switch this up a bit. And then you get to go again every 70 seconds. So I'm sure that it's a bit like when you're practicing something in HEMA, that repetition improves it. So you can get the idea that 2 months into the run on that final weekend, we were killing it. The screens in that maze were brilliant.
It sounds like a very scientific process. So like now you're an expert in how to frighten people.
I wouldn't say that, but I think I've got quite a logic based brain. I'm quite scientific in the way I think of things, so the excitement of that kind of logically, I can be very obsessive over things. I've got ADD, and that for 2 months my obsession was scaring people and having fun doing it, and I wanted to be the best person I could in that maze, and every time we went on I was just pushing to be the best scare actor for that entire 6 hours. I got a bit of a reputation in the maze that if I could skip a break and go back in, I'd do so.
Really?
And
you received an award from your colleagues, did you not?
Yeah, that blew me away, because there were some so talented people in that maze. We all got taken aside and told to vote the person who we thought brought the most to the maze, both in outside support and like energy and compassion and talent in the maze. And I voted for another person who will remain nameless because I loved all my colleagues, but Dead Person, we were the huge energy and really like were there for people and bringing them on. So the fact that I then wasn't actually able to go to the award ceremony, but got a message going through going that the rest of my colleagues have voted me for this, I was blown away. It was quite one of the best achievements you'd get, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you know, you've done the scare acting, but you've also like your let's go back to your childhood briefly, because when you said you when you were a little girl you drew a picture. Tell us about this picture. It was a, what do you want to be?
Oh yeah, it was I was ever since I was little, it was very clear that I was born in the wrong century. And I loved films and loved the action scenes and the fight scenes. And like even the little girl, my dad, I'd watch King Kong, but my dad would skip over the bits that were inappropriate for me. So I got the cool bits. And we did similar things for Jurassic Park and stuff like that. And I've figured out I wanted to be a stunt woman. And I've got pictures from, I think I wanted to be an acrobat up until the age of 5. Then I wanted to be a stunt woman. And how in school you get like worksheets in which it says, oh, draw what you want to be when you work out, when you grow up in like year 3 or 4 or something. And you get builders and the nurses and the teachers. And I drew a horse rearing up with me falling off the back of it. I want to be a stunt woman and I want to get on the British Stunt Register. And ever since that point, I've had a lot of people say it's unrealistic, you're not going to do that. I think at the time I had teachers there going, okay, so that's a nice job, but how about we think of a proper job for you to do? I think one of my favorite, someone trying to counteract this, was in secondary school and we had our careers advice meeting. Yes. And I sat down and I went, okay, I want to be a stunt rider, I want to be a stunt performer. And they were there going, okay, so let's look into what you like. You like animals, you like being outdoors, you like challenges, and you don't get scared of a bit of bad weather. The computer says you should be a fish farmer.
Not against fish farmers, but you know, why do careers advice do that to you? Why is it you go in with like, I want to be this, and they give you something else? It's like, come on, just work with me a bit.
Yeah, as someone who up until about the age of 10 would run out of the fishmonger screaming because the fish faces scared me. I don't think that fish farming is a career path I should have followed.
No.
So yeah, that was one of the more eccentric ones, but I had all sorts. I went through a period of wanting to be an architect because I like grand designs, and then realised that I didn't want to, I wanted to do quirky stuff. I wanted to build quirky, like fantasy things. Basically, I wanted to be in a fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been quite creative, but no, it's I love expressing myself in my body and through performing in that way. And let's be honest, we all want to be Legolas.
Aragorn.
I mean, Aragorn's pretty good, but didn't shoot 3 hour arrows out of a bow into an elephant.
That's true. But I mean, like, the thing is, you go, I want to be Legolas. They go, maybe go for Aragorn.
Yeah.
Be like, aim high, aim for Legolas.
Yeah, I'll aim for Legolas. I'll be happy with Aragorn. I'll deal with Boromir.
I'll deal with Boromir. So, stunt performing, like all the, you know, your original wish as a little child was to be the, as you said earlier, the person doing the cool stuff in the films.
Yes.
Rather than just the acting, like the actual, like falling off a horse, as you pictured it. And along the way, you've had these kind of adverse reactions from people, from careers advisors to, I don't know, teachers or just people saying, you sure, you know, that's the kind of, but I mean, that is such a rare quality in a person to know from a very young age exactly what I want to be into adulthood. That's what I want to do. And to have that goal and to just keep that trajectory and aim for it. So as part of your on your path towards becoming a stunt woman, you've got to achieve a certain number of hours of stunt stuff, haven't you? And you recently did a workshop fighting for screen.
I'm very lucky. My dad's in the film industry. When I was a little girl, I got sat down at Pinewood's 50th birthday party with a stunt woman. I basically found a stunt woman, sat down, and went, "So how do you do this?" And she told me about this thing called the British Stunt Register, which the BSR is the biggest institute in the country, and like renowned for around the globe of the being the Olympic athletes of the stunt world. And to get on the British Stunt Register, you need to tick certain boxes, and that's seven disciplines in certain exams. But you also need to do their fighting for screen workshops. You need to do a certain amount of them to get on it, and do some acting workshops. And it's a bit of a goal that you constantly aim for. You're one of the best if you're on it, but there are many stunt performers that aren't quite yet on it, but still being able to work in the industry because they're almost there. Or they've got other elements and they're not going for it at all, but they're really strong just in gymnastic or just in horsework. But for my age, I got told the British Stunt Register, and that's what I want to be, an old lady in it, and be able to tell my grandkids, "Yeah, I did it. I got there." And I did the very first step of getting through the door. Is I did their fighting for screen workshop yesterday, actually. I got an email sent through, and it just said, "Ed, they've got a space become available. First comeback gets it." And I had a bit of a like, "Oh, I'm not ready for this," but sent an email back and got the place. So yeah, I
Excellent.
went and was training in it yesterday. It was unarmed concentrated. So unfortunately no fancy sword stuff, but I got plenty of that the week before. And yeah, it was super great. It was stunt coordinators running it. And really it was really great to kind of work with stunt performers for the first stunt coordinators for the first time. Because I think the best thing is that stunt coordinators are almost always stunt actors before they're stunt coordinators, so they really understand it. But they've got to be hard and scared on set. They've got to be slightly scary. So it's nice to meet them and realise they are just humans, and they are really nice humans, and they're humans that know their stuff. So it was just great. We spent the morning learning drills and learning the differences that a lot of my martial arts training and what little I mucked around with HEMA and with the stage combat, how they I've actually picked up habits that don't work for this, and I need to switch up how my muscles have been trained to work for how they want to do things. And each coordinator is different. Each coordinator will want you to do something different, and it's learning to be so adaptable. And it's really little things, like I was doing case of rapier and the week before, and that like a lot of rapier work, it's a lot of like landing on your heel, which I spent 4 days trying to get out of the fact of landing on my heel and getting my lunges to not look like taekwondo, which is very much ball of your foot, and I toe strike when I run. And then I've managed to get that for my case of rapiers, and I've gone into this week with the BSR, and we're doing a it was all very boxing heavy and being able to move around quickly. And I got to, okay, so now come back up to you, to your toes. It's crazy how tiny weeny things and how much you bend your knees or what angle your back foot is in. And it's something that I feel translates a lot with the HEMA world, is that the different weapons, there can be such a tiny thing, like even the way you hold your wrist, and it completely changes the impact and the force you have behind it.
100%.
Yeah, we were drilling that in the morning and learning some drills that we can practice in front of the mirror. And then we did choreography in the afternoon. And I had a brilliant partner. We worked through a piece of choreography. We then filmed it, and the coordinators then critiqued us, and we went away and filmed it again. And then finished the day on that. So it was just great to have that really exciting, just step in the door and just see what it's all about and realize that, yeah, I am in love with this. And it's not going to be easy. I don't know if I'm going to get there, but I want to be able to say I've tried. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that, I mean, I'm at the age that why not?
That's such a fantastic attitude as well, because I think a lot of people will be like, this is too much, I can't do it, I shouldn't do it, you know, that fear of failure or fear of success even. Just the fact that you're like, I want to have tried to do it is great motivation. And the fact that you as a child, okay, you said, you know, you're privileged to have a parent who's in the film industry, but the fact that you had a role model who was a stunt performer, a woman that you could talk to and sort of essentially mentor you to a degree to show you what's out there, no doubt is what made this all seem possible for you in the first place.
And it was great to talk to a woman and kind of be able to have that figurehead, that there it is an industry in which it is starting to change, but it is male dominated, because it's starting to change on our screens. But primarily, unless you're doubling a lead, it is there's not a lot of, well, if you see a background fight, there's still not a lot of women in it. It's all the leads, it's all the people in front of them in that act, and it's in the background and in the battles, it's still a bit different. And I don't think that that's just the film industry. I think that that is the people coming through and the people training. And I do think that is changing. I'm really lucky to have some excellent people to guide me on that journey. But just at that young age to realize it could be me, and I'm average height. I'm 5'6". I'm quite slender. Mm-hmm. And I'm privileged enough that put me in chain mail, I'm flat chested of anything, I can play a teenage boy.
Which is quite handy, I guess. It's kind of a role reversal of from Shakespeare's time, where they had to get teenage boys to play women.
Yeah.
So the sword play stuff you've done, like you mentioned, you've done martial arts, you dabbled in HEMA a bit, and you've done some stage combat stuff as well. I know you're a LARPer, but you said something to me that kind of blew my mind earlier, which is that you're a second generation LARPer.
Yeah, my mum met my dad under a rock. That's the story we've always been told. I'm one of the first lot of the second generation, but there's loads of people coming through with kids that soon will take over the world. My dad was he actually went to anyone who'd laugh and know that Private Trap was one of the first in the UK, and he took his dwarf when he was 14 to that and made his own hammer that got thrown to a wall, fell apart and got failed. For being able to be used in battle, because it wasn't safe. But he then did it, and then my mum worked in a tailor's shop and was measuring out fabric it was her one of her first jobs, and she's now a nursery nurse. She doesn't have much interest in materials, but at the time that was the job she had. And her boss at the time was there busy measuring out the materials. They're going, "Oh, I'm into LARP. Do you want to come along?" And that boss is now my godmother.
Oh,
And that's how they met. And since that time, they ran horror LARPs together. Most, I think all our godparents, all mine and my brother's godparents are LARPers. A lot of like friends that we called our uncles growing up, even though they're not related, but that's how close they are to family. They still run a LARP site now. And yeah, I owe a lot to that funny little hobby. But I think what was great was that they let me and my brother discover it ourselves. It would never put on us that we knew it was a thing. And my 7th birthday party, I wanted a Raven birthday party, you know, the BBC TV show.
Yes.
So they got all their old friends together, and we all played pretend as Raven, and we all had our own little symbols on, and we all fought over who was the sun, because it was always the coolest person had the sun sign on them. And that my godfather Tone played Raven, with a staff me and my brother still have with a Raven head on it. I think the adults are having just as much fun, if not more fun, than the kids. And it ended with us throwing water balloons at the evil lord who had stolen the princess, who was in reality his wife. So he chucked her over her shoulder and ran off with her.
Brilliant.
We had someone playing Dobby. It was madness. It was so much fan. And it's one of those things that even friends that aren't nerds and friends that have no interest in swords and fantasy and stuff, would still bring up years later, is that they'd remember that birthday party. But yeah, so it was never forced upon me and my brother, but if we wanted it, it was there. And then we discovered Empire when I was 18 and he was 16, and we went and kind of flew from there. That was in 2018, and we met some amazing people, and yeah, just continued the adventure there. I did my first like stage combat scripted fight in an orc pit, and that was when I went, "I want to do this. I want to do this properly. I don't want to muck around and have a good time," which there's nothing wrong with that. Plenty of people just do that and they have a wonderful time and they do it at the weekends. But that little part of my head, that being able to get obsessed with things and want to be the best of it, just lit up at this fight. And that was when I started doing stage combat. So really, everything in a trajectory had bounced around a lot, but it's all been quite focused into just wanting to be that badass fighter on the screen that can jump on and off of horses and go into battle. I just want to be a Viking. By and by, I just want to be a
Get
Viking.
as close to it as you can.
Yeah.
So it's we're halfway through, we're 30 minutes in. Folks who are watching at home, there's six of you at the moment. If you want to ask Ellen anything, whether it's about swords, it's about horses, about stunts, about acting, LARPing, puppetry, prop making, scenography, how do you know that? Scenography.
I did it for
Please,
3 years. Just learned from
yeah.
that. That's
If you wanna ask us anything, at the bottom of your phone screen, you'll see there is a speech bubble with a question mark in it. Just tap that, type in your question, and we will open it up, and we will have a read. While you're thinking about your questions, I'm just gonna carry on with my questions. So, you mentioned martial arts and wanting to be an acrobat when you were little. Have you always been into like physical activity since you were a child? Like, were you very fit and athletic?
I, in a weird way, yes, but I never thought of myself as sporty. I did judo, I was always into scouts and walking my dog and running around with sticks and pretending to fight. And started judo age 7 in a brilliant little local club near where I lived and grew up. I did that to junior black belt. I did that for 10 years till I was 16. And I wanted to learn to ride because that's what all the I wanted to learn to ride to be a knight. I didn't want to learn to ride to be a princess. I wanted to ride to be a knight. And I had to do that. I was there to my parents. I want a pony party for my birthday. And for my 7th birthday party, they're going, okay, we'll let her have one and she'll get it out of her system. So I went and I had my pony party, and then that went to me wanting to ride more often. So my nan brought me 12 pony mornings for the year, and it was my choice to place those in the year. So I could do it all in January. I could ride 12 times in January, but then I wouldn't ride for the rest of the year. So then I spread that out, and then that slowly developed into the basically I begged, borrowed, and stealed anything the four legs that didn't move. And if it didn't move, if it wasn't lame, I'd probably ride it. But I, even though I did all of this, I've never really been a team sport person, like netball and football. I've never really been had that much of an interest. So school sports, I thought I wasn't sporty, and I had the bullies basically. I was a bookworm. I'd had my nose stuck in a book, and I never thought I was sporty. But I always knew I wanted to be a stunt woman. So I ticked that box called GCSE PE for some reason. I have no idea why I did at the time. And then that was the moment I started really going. I discovered sport. I started running a bit in that time, but then I properly discovered running at university. So it kind of started to get more sporty and more athletic through that. And then we moved to Shropshire and I just turned into a wild woodland being. We live right next to a woodland that you can ride in for 6 hours and never cross your paths. So I just disappeared from that until university. And then that was the moment I was there going, I want to get a degree, so I've got something to fall back on, just in case I actually have to fall back on it from taking a fall and not being able to be a stunt woman. So I got a degree. But at the time, they're going, I need to start training now. And that was when I started doing taekwondo. But I had to stop doing judo just before GCSEs. I had a wrist injury and I've got one ligament in my left wrist and had a 3-year recovery. So yeah, I then started taekwondo because judo was very wrist heavy, and taekwondo was less so, or less so in a way that would injure that injury that I was still recovering from. I fell in love with taekwondo. I started running properly. I had a friend called Richard who started basically when he said, oh, you should start running, I think you'd really like it. I went, nah, I'm not a runner, I'm not a runner. And they go, oh, you should try it. And they're going, yeah, I've never been able to run. They're going, do couch to 5K. I started couch to 5K. I skipped the first 6 days. I then continued doing couch to 5K, did that, and then I accidentally did a 10K because I did the 5K. And then they're going, I'll just run around this pitch for a bit longer because I'm enjoying the music. And then I kept going, and then I kept going. And then they're going, I've just done a 10K. So does that mean I'm a runner now? And then I started
I'm
trail
gonna have
running.
to try that because I've tried and failed to get into running. I just cannot do it. Like, I know lots of people who love running, and I'm like, I just cannot enjoy it at all.
Oh, we're crazy people. Don't trust any of us.
Like, how is this enjoyable? I just don't get it.
I
We've
think
got a
really,
question here. Sorry, go on.
sorry, I was just going to say for me with running, it was because we're at university, I couldn't afford to ride at the university stables all the time, but I missed hacking and I missed adventuring in the woods. And the closest I could get to that was to run in the woods. Because I get to a faster speed than just walking and be able to see more landscape. And then I started running in company with friends and with Richard a lot, is that we'd be there in horizontal storms. That was some of the best times to run, is we'd have our head torches on this time of year, be sliding around in mud, doing, it was closer to skiing in mud than it was running, but we had a brilliant time. And we went for about 8 kilometers up and down hills. I went into the door of my room. My flatmates were playing D&D upstairs. I'd take off my trainers, get in the shower, get cleaned up, and then just go with hot chocolate or soup and something and go sit down in their game and then go be nosy in their game and make really, really useful comments from the sidelines that probably weren't that useful.
So we got a question here from our mutual friend who suggested that I invite you on the live stream, William Dawson. What is the most surprising case of one of your interests helping out with another interest?
I think with that, it's probably yoga. One of the things I started doing at university was yoga, and that's changed the game with everything. Mm-hmm. You hear everyone there going, I don't do yoga because I won't do yoga because I'm not flexible. Mm. And I'm hypermobile, so I've got that small bit of flexibility, but growing up I couldn't bridge. So I started doing yoga. I did 30 days of it, and then I've been doing it for a couple of years now. But it's learning that body control. Ooh. And being aware of that body control has changed the game in so many disciplines. Everything, just like we were saying with sword stuff, is that being able to understand that my wrists are connected to my ankle. Mm. And just having that awareness and being able to position the angles of your knees and your body, and like even it's changed the game in all my interests, in all my sports, and just really understanding that those little things and those basics are so important. I think really I owe a lot to yoga.
that awareness of the body, the proprioception, the flexibility, and I think, like, when people say, I can't do yoga because I'm not flexible enough, it's like, well, that's why you do it.
Yeah.
To become more flexible. It's like when people say, I can't do fencing, I'm not coordinated enough. It's like, well, that's why you learn. You don't go into an activity being good at it. You start off being rubbish at it, and then you get better because you are learning and you're practicing.
I think, unfortunately, in our culture, there's a huge understanding that adults are experts.
Yes.
Yeah. You haven't learned something as a kid, you can't learn it as an adult, because all the adults, they're the best in that sport because they've done it as a kid, so they're already there. But I think we need more of an understanding with the, you may be 46, but you can start doing a sport now and you can learn. You have to think that kids, they learn really quick. They've got really adaptable bodies and great brains to be able to lock into things. But they still only learnt to get to that level over 8 years. Yeah. Like, when you're older, 8 years goes in no time. So being able to grasp those basics and stuff like that, you'll be able to, basically, you pick up anything. And it's okay to be rubbish to start off with. Absolutely. I think that's the biggest thing we all need to understand, is it's okay to fail. It's okay to pick yourself up. And I think one of my favourite songs at the moment is about that. It's about saying well done for being a loser, because at least you tried.
Yeah.
And you're better than the person just watching from the side. And I think I love that song, because whenever you feel a little bit down, and whenever you feel like something's not going your way, or you've lost at something, you've fallen off, or you've had something that's knocked your confidence, but at least you're further in that journey. I'm a long way from being a stunt woman, but I'm closer to being a stunt woman than if I'd not done anything. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that kind of exploration and pushing forwards.
Absolutely. Part of your stunt woman criteria is you have to do some horseback stuff. So you were a pupil with the Knights of Middle England, I think you said, for 3 months. Tell us about your time with them.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I finished university in 2021, and like a lot of the opportunities I've had, I sent a million emails, and I got the opportunity to go and have an interview with the Knights of Middle England, and then through doing that, I got a placement working as a working pupil for them. So I mucked out stables, I got the horses ready, I put the jousting horses out on the gallops, and I learned so much from my time there. It wasn't easy, it was bloody hard work, and I spent time I was living on a caravan in sight, which is great because I was surrounded with it at all the time. And in that time, I'd be able to train. So I learned the basics of jousting, and I learned the basics of horseback archery. And I had the most amazing instructor who took Tanya, who's their lead instructor there, who just took my riding to a whole new level. And like we were saying, that small details that really change how the horse acts below you. But in that time, I started trick riding. And it's something I've always loved. I've seen the Cossacks jump on and off of horses at shows and stuff. But at that time, I started and I really, really gelled with it. I had Emma Titherly, who actually lived in the caravan next to me, who I became really good friends with. And at every opportunity I could, I'd be out in wind and rain trick riding with her, and I learned so much from that. And that's the one thing that even after my 3 months, whenever I can afford it and whenever I can fit it in, I'm back at Warwick, I'm back at the Knights of Middle England, and I'm trick riding. Even though I was on this British stunt register course yesterday, they go, that's generally in a kind of direction that I can link that into going to Warwick. So I was trick riding on Friday, and Emma's really amazingly, she's had this brilliant opportunity, and she's traveling Europe with her Liberty Act and trick riding for Cavaluna. And I hope she's having the most amazing time. But I'm now training with James, who is also really, really great and giving me different things to work on. And they both have quite similar teaching styles. They teach very similar stuff. I'm both equally passionate and lovely about it. But like everyone, you've got different instructors that are strong at different things. Like James is a really, really strong vaulter. And vaulting is one of the things I really struggle with. So he's really helping me with that. Basically, I got given the opportunity to be a squire, and like everything, I went, why the hell not?
Fantastic opportunity. We've got two more questions come in, and then I think we're going to have to wrap it up because we're running out of time. From Rohan Hyde One, how has doing different combat styles affected each other? So how does doing different combat styles affect each other physically and mentally, such as mindset differences between LARP battles and martial arts sparring? So how do you balance those different mindsets? How does it play out?
That's one of the most challenging things for me. I find that is probably one of the hardest things for me. There are a lot of counteractive parts in it, and even to the point that within Taekwondo, the different federations all kick differently. I started doing lowercase ITF, and I'm now doing uppercase ITF. And even though they're both ITF, one kicks a lot higher than the other, and one's a lot more formal in your presentation than the other. But I think the hardest thing to work with is that with all the martial training and all of that, so I think the moment you change that to stunt stuff and to stage combat stuff, you're going from learning to hurt people to learning to look like you're hurting people, but not. It's a completely the opposite end of the spectrum. Like I think, because obviously Hema's learning to do it as historically as possible. So a lot of what you learn is brutal, of trying to look like you're doing as little as possible, but doing the biggest thing. Rather than stage combat, it's doing as much as possible and doing no damage.
Yeah.
And those things, they are so vastly different that that's the biggest thing to mess with your head. And you have to kind of have different modes. I'm in my stage combat mode. I'm in my stunt registry mode. I'm in my LARP mode. And you have to be able to switch between the two. That's still something that I'm very much learning.
It's all part of the journey. One more question here. Last question from Cassonian Reaver. What's a skill that you really want to learn but isn't necessarily within the fields you already train?
Think that's a hard one. I'd love to learn Chinese lion dance.
The two pairs of the pair of people. They
platforms,
don't they?
If I'm going completely random, and I am quite a random person, I go off on tangents, but I think with all the puppetry and the physical nature, when you see them compete and bouncing around and working as a pair and a duo with that puppet on top of them, it blows me away. I'd love to be able to do that. And it's kind of a amalgamation of the physicalness and the puppetry coming together.
And you said you don't like team sports, but that is kind of like an almost telepathic link between the two performers.
When I say I don't like team sports, I don't like secondary school team sports when you've got a load of teenage girls trying to outdo each other in the changing room, hitting each other in the face with nets.
I guess that's akin to like being a dance partner, I guess. It's literally like a dance partner. That is amazing to witness. Just watching people train that is fantastic.
They blow me away. Those people are like superhuman.
Which just leads me to say, Ellen Lavery, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. And thank you for pronouncing my surname correctly. We're usually called Lavery. We're Lavery. We've always been Lavery. It may have been something to do with my ancestors thinking they're snobs. We're very passionate Laveries. So thank you for saying it correctly.
I didn't even know. So you're very welcome. And I would look forward to following your career and following your Instagram. So give her a follow, everyone. That's Ellen Lavery, stunt performer, actor, sonographer, puppeteer, you name it. Adventurer. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.